Blog Talk Radio.
Who are you?
Oh, I'm part of the Neighborhood Crime Watch. The way this works is you watch, I commit the crime.
Oh my God. No.
No. There's no talking. You just give me your watch and wallet now.
Here's my problem. You're black.
Mr. Crane!
What? I'm Debbie Crane. I'm a big shot.
So am I.
If you kill me, the headline's gonna be Black Guy Kills White Big Shot.
And that's the last thing we need when we're trying to elect an African-American's president.
Dear God. How about if I just blow your brains out right now?
That doesn't work for me. Work for you?
Please.
Hey.
All right. Watch. Wallet. Gun. Knee. Right foot. Left foot. Thank God for guns, huh, Jay?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to enter this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's Abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lock.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Hey, folks, you know, listening to that clip, I really do miss Boston Legal and, of course, the great over-actor, William Shatner. You know, that line where he says, here's my problem. You're black. I'm Denny Crane. I should say the same thing. Here's my problem. You're lower tier. I'm Afro Nerd. I'm just saying, folks. Listen, we have a lot to get into. 90-minute special, midweek in review broadcast. But call in number. 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Here's a jammy jam from a few years back I just discovered from a new program that I really love, the UK version of The In-Betweeners. The In-Betweeners. They have recently released a US version on MTV, but I've been checking out the UK version, and they have this song in the background. So, you know, every once in a while, a popular commercial song may slip through, and I'll play it. This song is called Shine by Booty Love. Yes, the group is called Booty Love. The name of the cut is Shine. And you know what? We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
Be your
right now. Enough of that. A game. Booty Love. Shine. Booty Love. Shine. UK's Booty Love. You know, you folks know I'm an Anglophile at heart, so I love UK music. And again, I got that as a background song from a recent show. Actually, the show's been around for 3 years. The U.S. version just came out this week, The In-Betweeners. But the U.K. version's been around for about 3 seasons, so I'm just getting into the U.K. version. A typical coming-of-age teenage comedy, that sitcom that I dig. I like what's going on with that. And, of course, they have music. And you know something, folks, shouting out the Oracle, we're boogie people. We stay in the boogie. We play rare groove. We play urban alternative. We do what we do. Okay, folks, without further ado, let's get in with the show. I could not do it without my partner in a white-collar crime. Come on, Captain. Let's come on in. Time to come on up.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Now listen up and pay attention. How do you read me, Sir Afro-Nerd?
Loud and clear.
All right. Now, everybody, listen up and pay attention. Food for thought now. I'm going to get into this. I want to talk about the nonviolent civil disobedience. What I mean by that are these movements that Martin Luther King were into, Gandhi, and etc. Some political figures will say that this is the best movement forward, the best way to get anything done. I disagree. The best way to get anything done is with violence. How so, Captain? Let me explain to you. Look at the United States. What does the United States do? Via the UN. They go into Libya. They go into Afghanistan. They go anywhere they want to go, pretty much. Bomb the countries and exact change. Change the leaders. Why? Because they have power. When you have power, the best way forward is with violence. You get the change done very fast that you want to come about. When you have no power, you have to appease to their guilt. Who's their guilt? The ones that have the power. So they give you charity. NAACP, you know what I'm talking about. Civil rights movement, you know what I'm talking about. That's why these great men use nonviolence, because you have no power. So what happens, the people with power feel sympathetic to your cause, and they throw you a little bit of scraps from the table. Then you get these fallacious mentalities, and you feel that you have overcome because they gave you a few scraps. And then you gather amongst yourself and say, yes, 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 we did this, we did that. That is not correct. Let me tell you what we did in this country. I'm going to talk about financial violence. Financial violence. They talk about this in corporate world. Okay? Financial violence. That means my money's here, I'm not going to spend my money here. Some people call it gangsterism. Now let's go back in time. We had somebody called Rosa Parks. You remember that woman, right? Remember her? Back in the bus situation. I believe it was in December 1st, 1955. Should be a historical moment. You should remember that. If you do not remember that, write it down, put it in, file it in your brain. December 1st, 1955. Montgomery, Alabama was the place to be where the beef set off. Now, why did the rules change in Montgomery, Alabama? Because of financial violence. The black community who rode on the buses decided they're not going to spend their money with the bus company. So things had to change because the bus company would starve. So that being said, the black community has financial power. The black community can, and the brown community, can exact financial violence if they want to. Then you can exact change. Now hold on, hold that thought right there. In this country, we've had individuals sitting in their glass house. You're raised in a two-parent household, which you should be. You got highly educated. You went and got your PhD and doctorate, which you should if you're given the opportunity. But you're an educated fool. I'm going to tell you why. For the last 50 years, you've been preaching to the savage Negro, the ones that are savages. Okay? The ones that, there's a difference now. Not all black people are savages. The captain's not saying that. An Afro nerd definitely would not say that. But some of us, when you're a blood, when you're a Crip, when you're the brown, the Latin kings, what are you doing? What are you doing? That's something to raise up your people? No, that's not something. You went savage, so you joined the gang. You're running around. You've been preaching to these people, you need to get educated. You need to go to school. You need to have jobs. You need to take care of your families. Hold on. That's like talking Chinese to a man who speaks English. You're wrong. You have to speak in their language. You've been off base for the last 50 years. What is their language? What, how do these people get their money? Some of them sell guns. Some of them sell drugs. Some of them chop up parts and go to the local chop shops. Some of them drive very nice cars. How are they able to do this? They understand dollars and cents. They will understand financial violence if someone can bring it to them, pushes that meme. You've been trying the go to school meme, which works with a person in a two-parent household. That works. They get that right off the bat. All right? This person who was raised with the mama working two jobs, five siblings, is not going to get that. You're speaking Chinese to this individual. But they can get the financial violence meme. So, okay, you want rims on your car? Instead of you going over here, go down to John. John's a black man. Or go over to Hector. Hector's a brown man. He has the shop. Spend your money with him. You're going to get the same rims. You start pushing that meme because that's something that that particular individual can understand. Why can they understand it? They're selling their drugs. They're selling their guns. They're flipping their little money. They understand that type of business. They understand that type of talk. And over a period of time, memes begin to grow. Memes begin to grow. And then you know what begins to happen in the black community? If the quote-unquote Mr. PhD and Mr. Doctorate that's been running for the last 50 years changes the memes and tells this to the black community, tells this to the Latin community, you know what begins to happen? 40% or maybe even 50% of what you do starts to stay in the black community. The problem with the black community, we cannot support, the whole infrastructure does not support all of our needs. It will not at this given point. We don't have our own hospitals. We don't have our own insurance companies. We don't have a lot of things. But some things we definitely, if we went out of our way, could be supported within the black community, not just the barbershop. There's other things. There's other businesses that are going on. You just have to go out of your way. But if that meme is not pushed by these educated fools, it never happens. What they've been doing for the last 50 years, it doesn't work. It works for a certain part, certain type of black people. Yes, they are different black people. Yes. All right? You have some that are educated. You have some that are raised this way. Some people, are, you know, they have nice civil service jobs. Yeah, some of us are going to be savage. It will not work for the savage black man. It will not work for that individual. You have to come with a different language so this individual can come up. And this language will make all of us come up. Financial violence. It worked in our history. That's why the Rosa Parks situation came about and brought about change. That was financial violence. Control where you're spending your money. Some of you might not make a lot of money. You may only make $300 for the week. You spend $280 on a pair of Jordans. Who are you spending your money with? Who are you spending your money with? That essentially is the problem. Then after you do this for a while, black and brown, then the powers that be have to come to you. Now, granted, There are some powers that be that fear this type of black empowerment, and they will try to sabotage the situation. This is true. But there's no reason, if you're listening, to fear this type of black empowerment, because black people only want the powers to be to love them. That's always the case. What happens? That's what's been driving these black people mad. We were slaves. We built the country. And you don't like us? You don't love us? Now, black people, if you want the powers to be to love you and respect you, go ahead and do financial violence. And they will have no choice. They will have to come to you. Just what happened there on December 1st, 1955, Montgomery, Alabama. That can happen throughout the whole black community. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Words of wisdom from the great Captain Kirk. Folks, quickly, I have a quick thing, and I'm going to move along to our delineated topics. Actually, two things. One thing, I have to shout out some of our operatives, and we do have operatives at Media Takeout. So in a way, as a backhanded compliment, I'm actually shouting out Media Takeout because they're being helpful. That platform, although it is a ghetto-centric lower-tier platform, they're helping us to spread the Afro-Nerd virus, Afro-Nerd Radio virus. So we're hitting them hard. We do have operatives putting up postings to check us out. So those who are normally accustomed to lower-tier thought and regressive black culture, this is not the place. But if you want enlightenment and edutainment, education, this is the place to be. We're getting a lot of folks that are emailing us saying that, listen, they like what they're hearing because they're not accustomed to hearing straight talk. We're going to give you this straight talk, no filler, straight, no chaser. All right. Also, real brief. This is yet another tragic story, but these stories happen with so much frequency, folks, that I can't invest the amount of emotion and time to really get into it. But Yahoo.com, they highlighted this story of a young college recruit, Tony Farmer, 18 years old, senior at Garfield Heights High School, who just received a 3-year prison term because of kidnapping, felonious assault, and other crimes. Something to do with his ex-girlfriend. I think he tried to regain a relationship with an ex-girlfriend, and she recoiled, and it became a big violent thing. Again, he was adjudicated based on kidnapping, felonious assault, and blah, 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 blah. I can play a little bit of the court proceedings, the sentencing, just a little bit, but you have to see the visuals. Again, Google, Yahoo, Tony Farmer, 18-year-old senior. Bottom line is, he knows that his college prospects have been severely debilitated because of this prison sentence. But when you hear him break down, well, you have to see him breaking down. Let me play this clip. We'll see if we can deal with it for about 10 or 15 seconds. But you get the point. If you see the visuals where this young man, literally, when he hears the sentencing, when he hears the judgment, he literally crumbles. He crumbles. So let's listen in. Hold on.
In case 562027, that the defendant shall serve a term of 3 years, which is the minimum, on count one of that. As to count two, in that case, felonious assault, a felony of the second degree, it is ordered that the defendant shall serve a term of 2 years in prison on that count. As to count three of that case, the robbery, which is also a felony of the second degree, the court ordered that the defendant shall serve a term of 2 years on that count as well. I haven't finished.
All right, I'm finished. Listen, I think, first of all, the young man probably misunderstood the sentencing. She was going down the line. The judge was going down the line as to the charges and the amount of time per charge. But the amount of time was going to be concurrent. happening at the same time. So I think he had two or three different charges, 2 to 3 years per charge, but they weren't not. It's not like he was going to be an added 2 to 3 years per charge. So she essentially said the most you're going to be serving potentially is 3 years, which is still a problem, which is still a problem. But what gets me, folks, again, I did not see a father present at the proceedings. And it's about menacing, it's about kidnapping, it's about an ex-girlfriend, it's about him having this lottery ticket to go to college on an athletic scholarship. He's only 18 years old, but I'm getting weary and leery of these excuses, the excuse building, the enabling when these young men screw up royally. I was talking to the captain behind the scenes, and I distinctly remember that when I was this young man's age, I remember, and I had to go into this whole thing about Generation X versus Generation Y, but I distinctly remember if you were friends or you were an acquaintance of someone who was on track scholastically or athletically to go to the next level, it wasn't uncommon for me to hear, oh, listen, I can't mess around with that. I can't entertain that because I'll mess up my scholarship. For someone to lose their composure in a court proceeding as if they had no idea if you do something crazy, something criminal, that you could potentially go to jail for an extended length of time, it's laughable. I'm sorry, folks. I really have forsaken this whole notion of victimization that liberalism and black liberalism, but liberalism in general has taught many black folk, not all, but many black folk. I get leery of it. I grow weary of it. I'm tired of it. What does Chris Rock say? I'm tired, 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 tired. I am tired. Enough already. You have an opportunity, you blow it. You blow it consistently. This will not be the first story we will hear. We will hear this type of story again, and we can't seem to nip it in the bud. Why perform at this level, scholastically or athletically, and then pretend as if you do something crazy that you could lose your freedom? Why black out now? This young man, I looked at him. He has this sloping forehead. Looks like some kind of Cro-Magnon. Lips are hanging out. Is this a cognition thing, folks? Answer me. Is this a cognition thing? How can someone be this lame? Even at 18, I understood that if you do certain dumb things, we can talk about some of the lower tier aspects. But on some level, some of those folks could perceive their situations to be hopeless. This is not the case. So now we're talking about what we've been talking about before. Since the inception of this blog and of the radio show, a lot of what we're talking about is cultural. We've seen people who have become millionaires who defecate with reckless abandon on their lives based on this keeping it real, ghetto-centric thing. When you leave the hood and you're in a multi-million-dollar mansion, you really haven't left the hood in some way. So there's something else going on. So it's even beyond the typical victimization answer. Well, the impoverished circumstances, the backgrounds, the educational standards, that may be an element, but some of it is cultural. And if we don't get a handle of it, we're going to see more young men like this that just blow it. That just blow it. Didn't Ocho Cinco, Chad Johnson, did he just defecate on his career in 24 hours over a woman like this young man did over a woman? They can't keep the hands off of them. They get physical. Idiots. I have no sympathy. I'm sorry, Captain. What are your thoughts? I'm going to go to a quick musical break, actually, but what are your thoughts on this? What's going on here?
Well, what you're dealing with in this scenario here, you have to understand, so black people have a tendency to be very talented, okay, meaning which they'll get opportunities. But it's also very, at times, the younger generation comes with that attitude that, don't judge me. You see what happened here? This man was judged. Your actions will be judged. Your actions will be judged. Everything you do is judged, either by your peers or someone at a higher level. That's the reality of it. So you have to watch your step. You have to watch your step. Now, the other side, some people might be looking at this saying, well, you know, if he was a white person, he probably would have got a lighter sentence. We can debate that all day, but he's not. Oh, he's not. He's a black man. We know what happens when black men go before the court. Let's not play games anymore. Let's not play the games anymore. They're going to hit you harder. That's just the way it is. That's the reality of it, okay? Let's not play that game anymore, all right? So you have to watch your step and realize you will be judged. And when you're an extremely talented individual and you get your opportunity, realize that the next person next to you might not necessarily get that opportunity and take advantage of it and just watch your step. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
Imagine James Holmes, the Aurora, Colorado killer, mass murderer. Imagine him just, he just might as well walk around, Captain. He can't be judged. This is a Generation Y response. I see it on tattoos. Only God can judge me. Okay, well, let's let good old James walk around after he killed 12 to 14 people. Let's let that go on. Let's let that ride because we can't judge him. We can't judge him. Come on, folks. Stop the nonsense. People are gaining interest in this show because we are going to analyze these problems with laser precision. We're not going to give you a whole bunch of filler and non sequiturs. We're going to give you straight talk. You need this talk. Dr. Cosby set it off, and we are continuing with this. All right, listen. We have a caller. I see you have a caller there. Caller, hold on. We've got to take a quick groove break. We do play urban alternative music here. We're trying to get away from the minstrel music that is just all over the place that's programming you. This is the Mighty Mos Def. We do play hip-hop here, folks. The Mighty Mos Def. Incidentally, the song is called Hip-Hop from the Black and Both Sides LP. Let's get into it. Let's groove. Mos Def Hip-Hop.
You say one for the trouble, two for the time. Come on, y'all, let's rock this. You say one for the trouble, two for the time. Come on. Reach is my hammer, bang the world into shape, now let it fall. Huh. My restlessness is my nemesis. It's hard to really chill and sit still. Committed to page, I write around. Sometimes won't finish for days. Screwing out my literature from the large to the miniature. I mathematically add, minister, subtract the wax, select the will it back. I'm feeling that.
Uh-huh.
From the core to the perimeter, black. You know the motto. Stay fluid, even in staccato.
Most death.
Full blooded, full throttle. Breathe deep inside the drum hollow. There's the hum, young man, where you from? Brooklyn number one, native son, speaking in the native tongue, I got my eyes on tomorrow. While you still trying to find where it is, I'm on the ad, where it lives and dies, violently, silently, shine so vibrantly that I squint to catch a glimpse, embrace the bass with my dog ink fingertips, used to speak the king's English, but caught a rash on my lips. So now I check just like this. Long range from the baseline.
Swish.
Move like an apparition. Go to the ground with ammunition.
Bow.
Move from the gate, boys. Cued on your tape. Putting food on your plate. Many crews can relate. Who choosing your fate? Yo, we went from picking cotton to chain gang line shopping to bebopping to hip hopping. Blues people got the blue chip stock option. Invisible man got the whole world watching.
Where you at?
I'm high, low, east, west, all over your map. I'm getting big rocks with this thing called
hip hop.
Where you can either get paid or get shot. When your product gets stopped, the fair weather friends flock. When your chop position drops and the phone calls. Chill for a minute, let's see who else top. Snatch a shell spot. Don't gas yourself up. The industry just a better built cell block. A long way from the shell top. And the bells to L rock, 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 rock.
Inside my head.
this low life getting treetop high. Hit is a backwater remedy, bitter and tender memory, a class C felony facing the death penalty. Stimulant and sedative, original, repetitive, violently competitive, a school unaccredited. The break beats you get broken with on time and inappropriate hip hop. Went from selling crack to smoking it. Medicine for loneliness, remind me of the loneliest and dizzy. Bubbles the B-boys getting busy. The wartime snapshot. The working man's jackpot, a $2 snack box, so beneath the crack spot, Olympic sponsor of the Black Glock. Gold medalist in the back shot, from the sovereign state of the half-nots, where farmers have trouble with cash crops. An old city like phase two, and I will simply amaze you, praise you, pay you, do whatever you say do, but black, it can't save you.
Okay, we're back. Again, that was a Mighty Mos Def. Hip-hop, black on both sides. Folks, feel free to give us a buzz. We are live. Don't be scared. The water is warm. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. I think for the next upcoming musical break, I'll give our listeners a dose of some Nina Simone. You need some spinach, folks. You need some spinach, some nourishment. If you continue to listen. Hey, Captain, it is what it is. People don't think of it. Sometimes you have to put things in a certain context for people to understand. Culture is a type of diet. Let me repeat that. Culture is a type of diet. And you cannot continue to listen. And this is for Generation Y. You can't keep on listening to Chris Brown and Rihanna and that kind of stuff. You can put them in a certain context. Heck, I listen to these folks on occasion, too, in a certain way. But I can't take them seriously. You come from greatness. You have an inheritance. That inheritance would be Stevie Wonder, Jimi Hendrix, Miles Davis, Louis Armstrong, Sarah Vaughan. That is your inheritance, folks. If you keep on defecating your inheritance and say things like, hey, you know, that's the old school. That's what old folks, you know, Muddy Waters and those folks. These people make terrific music, great music that's lasted for decades. Now, your white counterparts are listening to your inheritance. You dumb black asses are into Chris Brown and Lil Wayne, a bunch of no talents. Now, we're seeing – oh, yeah, they started me up, Captain. I'm going crazy now. Nicki Minaj allegedly has been given a spot on American Idol. Does she sing? I guess it doesn't matter. Does it? What I'm saying is this constant thing about, that's old folks' music. No, fool, that's your inheritance. The 15-year-old Caucasian male is not defecating on The Who or Led Zeppelin or The Beatles. They're not doing it. But you dummies are defecating on your inheritance. That's it. That's enough. Sometimes I get into it. All right, folks, let's get into the topics. A few days ago, noted ESPN sports analyst Skip Bayless said some things that might be construed as being controversial. Emphasis on the word might be construed as being controversial, essentially stating that Robert Griffin, is that the gentleman's name?
Yes.
Captain?
Yes.
Robert Griffin III?
Sir Dunk-a-Lot.
Right. Redskins, quarterback of color, that he's not up to snuff, and that they're looking for a white replacement, and that essentially he's giving a shout-out saying that, well, you know, white folks support white people, just like black folks support black people, that whites oftentimes are rooting for the white guy, pretty much like the last election, rooting for the white guy. So what I want to do, let's just play Mr. Bayless's comments, and then we'll unpack it for you. Give us our opinion. You're welcome to give us your opinion. I see we have a caller, so we'll get to you in a moment, caller. Let's get to the comments, and I'll answer the phone. This is Bayless on RG3. Hold on.
So some foolish Redskin fans, and we know, you know, fans, foolish, that's sort of like, doesn't that go together, right? okay? They're going to sit back and say, God, boy, RG3 was struggling. He got fumbled. He threw a couple of bad passes. Maybe Kirk Cousins is better right now. Maybe we should go with Kirk. No, I don't want to see that. I don't want to set up that dynamic. And I'm going to throw it out there. You also have the black-white dynamic, and the majority of the Redskin fans are white, and it's just human nature to root if you're white for the white guy, because it just happens in sports. Just like black community will root for the black quarterback. And I'm for the black guy. But I'm just saying I don't like the dynamic for RG3. It could stunt his growth in the NFL.
All right. Let's open up the lines and see what our audience have to say. Again, folks, our Afternerd featuring Captain Kirk, Midweek and Review Edition. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Let's go to the phones. Caller, welcome to Afternerd. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from, 215. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Yes.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Pretty
good. My name is Aisha. I'm from Philadelphia. I was listening to that, so I was kind of taken back, you know, that it was just so loosely said on air like that. Was that actually – I didn't catch the broadcast because I heard the clip. Was that broadcast on TV, or is that a private radio station where he made that comment about black?
No, this is a cable – a pretty popular cable TV program, ESPN Sports. Bayless is a pretty popular guy.
Okay. He actually said that one. Wow.
So what about the truth of what he's saying? Essentially, he's saying that white people root for white people. That it's kind of like the Great White Hope phenomenon, that they root for the white guy, and black folks conversely they root for the black guy. Is there any truth to what he's saying, or is he kind of out of pocket about it? What do you think?
I think that's a general statement. I think that for us as black, a real sports guru, think of a person of sports and figures would look more so at talent, more so that I would expect one would think of us to look more so at the talent versus the color. And, you know, he's saying, well, I'm rooting for the black guy. But, I mean, for him to say that, I mean, that was bold of him. But, I mean, he's stating this, what his reality is in his world. Like, he's speaking, I guess, as a white person with white people, and saying, well, white people work for the white guys, and then the black people, you know, they vote for them. And, I mean, we as black, I would support, of course, someone that is talented, that is black, and that's in the league, because there was a time when it was hard for us to get to that level. So for him to say that, I just think that that is the reality in some of their minds. If I may.
I kind of agree with that. I think that might be he maybe is speaking for himself in a way. I mean, I'm sure that there are whites that feel that way, but I can't say that the totality of white people. But, you know, at the same time, there's such a thing as tribalism. And I will say this much. I think black folks are condemned for supporting black causes. You know, when we supported President Obama, where many blacks, I will confess I did, even as a conservative, I did vote for President Obama. It wasn't purely because he was a black person. It had, you know, there's many black folks that were going for the presidency before President Obama. But he was the right black person. What are your thoughts on this, Captain? What are your thoughts about him saying that, well, you know, it's human nature? He pretty much said it's natural for the white people to root for their own. What are your thoughts on this, Captain?
I think that's his own mindset. When you're dealing with sports, you want your team to win. Like me, I like the Patriots. Who's the quarterback? Tom Brady. Tom Brady, in case you do not know, Tom Brady is a white man. You understand? Now, if you put a black quarterback back there and he's not as good as Tom Brady, I'm going to say get the black guy out of there. Let's get going with Tom Brady because I want the Patriots to win. You see, so I think in that's his mindset, and that was a generalized statement. You cannot speak for everybody. When you start to make those types of statements, you come off as a total racist now. You have to be real careful. You have to be real careful at that given point. You can't just generalize like that and just make an assumption. That's what he did. It's like he's speaking for the whole entire white race. You know, you want your team to win at the end of the day. Whoever's in there going to make you win. That's all. That's all what it is. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Well, you know what? I think what he said has some validity, some, because we do see that people do react in a tribal fashion. When Jeremy Lin, when we experienced Linsanity here in New York, there were quite a few Asian folks that came out at Madison Square Garden to root for one of their own. So we can't pretend that on occasion we will see tribalism. The difference, though, I think, with how it's perceived with minorities is that you can't do that. You can't support Barack Obama because you're just voting for him because he's black. It seems like the positioning of whites is that they can critique you for your tribalism, but you can't critique them for their tribalism. You see, we've seen white tribalism to the nth power. We've seen for coloreds only. We've seen that. We've seen whites only water fountains. You invented tribalism. When blacks and other minorities, when they exhibit or exert their tribalism, they do it because of past instances of not being able to, of unfairness. The black guy is always, or the black or brown or yellow, has always been the underdog. So if you are accustomed to being in the underdog position, then obviously you have to support your own. This is the first time we've seen a man of color reach this height in American politics. So if this was as custom, see, in the white world, a white candidate is custom. In the white world, with a black candidate in this position, it's not as custom. So that's why I think they, for whatever reason, many, I would never say all, but many whites fail to see that dynamic, that is just different. And I was a big, as you know, I was going on and on about Jeremy Lin. I am still a Jeremy Lin fan, even though he's going to Houston. Still a Jeremy Lin fan. I did not get into his quote-unquote Asian-ness. The guy is bad on the court. He's a hot player. The guy can ball. It's that simple. So it can't always be, and I guess in Skip Bayless's world, it cannot always be rooting for the white guy. It should be rooting for the team. I want the Knicks to win. You know what I mean? I don't care about the black players on the Knicks winning. I want the Knicks to win. It is what it is. All right, Philly, listen, as always, we appreciate your support. Continue listening. I'm going to put you on hold. We're going to go to another musical break. I want to give you some food, some cultural food. When we get back, I want to talk about Paul Ryan and his black ex-girlfriend, as if this is a big deal. For some people, for some folks, it's a big deal that he went to college and got experimental. He got experimental, had some brown sugar, and now we're supposed to be shocked like that's a wonderment. It's not that big of a deal. I'm sorry. All right. Let's go to a musical break. This, as I said before, this is Nina Simone, one of our great songstresses. I Put a Spell on You. I played this before. This is her rendition of I Put a Spell on You. Nina Simone, we'll be back in a few moments.
Put a spell on you. Cause you're mine. Do, 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 do. You better stop the things you do. I can't stand it cause you put me down. Yeah, yeah. I put a spell on you. on you. Because I'm brandy, I'm the dead.
It was 8 days ago, folks, August the 13th, 8 days ago, that a CNN reporter by the name of Hamby, Peter Hamby, tweeted the following, quote, Paul Ryan to Milwaukee Magazine in 2005, I have a sister-in-law who's African-American and my college sweetheart was black. 8 days ago. You heard anything about that, Snurdly? You didn't know that Ryan dated a black chick? And you didn't know that his sister-in-law was African-American? Well, it's 8 days ago. How come we don't know this? How a CNN guy tweets it and it dies. And all the while, Obama and Biden and the Democrats are trying to paint Ryan as some big racist. Along with Romney, other big racists. Yeah, Brian's budget. And there's Biden out there saying, yeah, they want to put you all back in chains. How come we don't hear this? We've heard everything negative they have on Ryan. I'll tell you why we don't hear it is because it doesn't help the Obama agenda. Pure and simple. Meanwhile, Anthony Weiner's tweets go all over the world. I don't know. It's an unfair world out there. Hey, folks, none of us expect anything productive from Harry Reid in the way of Senate leadership. In fact, just...
All right. If you didn't recognize that voice, that was Rush Limbaugh. And incidentally, the song that I played before, I got a spell on you. I put a spell on you. Excuse me. I played the original, which was by Screaming Jay Hawkins. Screaming Jay Hawkins. That was the great Nina Simone's cover of I Put a Spell on You, the Screaming Jay Hawkins classic. All right, folks, again, we're back into the fold after featuring Captain Kirk.
Whoa,
we've moved along. Transition time. We're talking about Paul Ryan, the Republican vice presidential candidate. And honestly, well, first of all, this is coming from an article from The Root, young woman by the name of Kelly Goff. I think I actually ran into her one time when I was a frequent guest commenter on NPR's News and Notes. I was a pretty regular commenter on the show, and I remember seeing her in the studio one time. So she's a writer for The Root. I believe that's Dr. Henry Louis Gates' outfit by way of the Washington Post. They have a African-American-inspired online news magazine, The Root. So she writes this piece called Does Paul Ryan's Black Ex-Girlfriend Matter? So just from the piece that you heard from Mr. Limbaugh, who I have, although as a conservative, I have no great love for this gentleman, and I use the term gentleman loosely. But every once in a while, a broken clock will tell the correct time at least twice. And maybe he's on to something. I think this is more about much to do about nothing. And I find it interesting that she brings this up because, first of all, many folks, especially black folk, are trying to look for a racial bent from the Republicans. Not that we don't see that. I mean, we see it on both sides of the aisle, actually, Captain. We've seen it on both sides of the aisle. It's one thing. One thing I will admit from the failed presidency of President Bush, probably the only thing that sticks out for me, the statement he said, was the the soft bigotry of low expectations. The soft bigotry of low expectations. That is a hallmark of liberalism to me, that they don't expect you to do better. The poor black folks, the poor black victims, you can't do for yourself. You can't take care of yourselves. You need white guidance. That's what I get from liberalism. And there's problems on the right side. They pull racial games too, but both parties pull racial games. Now, I don't know if Ryan himself provided this information. I don't know if we really needed to know all this, because to me, I think interracial dating is a non-issue. This is the 21st century. It's not a delicacy, is it? He's making it seem as if he wants the public to know, if I'm to assume that Mr. Ryan put out this information. If he put out this information that really was not solicited, if he's just putting it out there, it comes off as if he's telling you he likes escargot. He likes a particular cuisine, or I've tried a black woman before. It could come off that way. And in the 21st century, I don't know the young woman's name that he went to college with, but let's say her name is Joanne. I'm not going to say Lakeisha, Captain. Joanne. let's say that this young man that this young woman's name is Susan or whatever. Joanne. I dated Joanne. I just dated Joanne. If I dated a woman, and I have, of a different ethnicity, I would not promote her ethnicity. It would not get that deep for me. If I'm dating a woman of Asian descent and her name is Susan, I say, hey, I dated Susan for a spell. I leave it up to you to find out her ethnicity, because you're dating the person. You're not dating her race. You're dating the person. But if Ryan and others are positioning these things as the race first, the person second, that doesn't dispel any notion of being non-biased, unbiased. What do you think about this disclosure? I think it's starting to gain some ground too. It's starting to gain some ground. I don't know what this is supposed to do. What am I supposed to do with this information, Captain?
Well, in my opinion, this is just a controversy, all right? Now, you have to look. It's not about who you date. It's about your policy at the end of the day. If we go back before 1865, just look back. Just look back in time briefly. Slave master would creep. Not all of them. They would creep into the quarters where the black woman was, and he would sleep with the black woman. But we knew what his policy was. And then there was a few after 1865 that were doing the same thing, but we knew what their policy was. We have to look at the policy. Just because you date somebody of a different race doesn't automatically give you a pass. You have to look at their policy. That's what you have to do at the end of the day. Who you date means nothing, especially when it comes to men. Men are dogs. We know that. Doesn't matter. You see something good-looking on the other side, you go on the other side, and you come on back if you want, or you may stay over there. But your policy still can reflect something else. It's about your policy. Back over to you, Sir Affleck.
Yeah, this has a lot to do with trying to gain political positioning. Even with the next story we'll get into with Congressman Todd Akin's rape comments or inappropriate rape. What was the actual term? I forgot what he said exactly, but his belief in consensual, non-consensual, rape, non-rape, this whole delineation of rape, it's all about political positioning. And actually, I have to give kudos to the Democratic Party this time around, because they are into this thing hard. They are really – normally you would see them taking shorts, as they say, on the street, where they really would not fight dirty with the Republicans. But this time around, they are taking political advantage all the way through. So in this case, I think this is more about the Democrats trying to take political positioning, or maybe I guess even Republicans maybe are trying to take political positioning on this matter by saying, hey, we can't be prejudiced because – or our guy can't be this sheet-wearing Klansman. He can't be this Klansman if he shared a bed with a woman of color. I hope that's not what they came out with. We mentioned behind the scenes when we had a discussion on this, Captain, that for the listeners, I'm pretty sure they may be familiar with this case. If not, it's a pretty well-known case, although it was more local. It was pretty international with Abner Louima. man of Haitian descent, man of color, Haitian descent, who was sexually brutalized, actually, with, you know, he had an altercation with a plunger. I'm being delicate. He had an altercation with a plunger thanks to officer, former officer, NYPD, Justin Volpe. Now, you know, you hear about this thing. He's brought in the charges that, again, talking about Louima. He's brought into the precinct, Brooklyn precinct. The charges against him were specious at best. But he, whether he was complying or not complying, somehow he fell on a plunger. And I mean that facetiously, but it's a serious matter. Justin Volpe and other police officers who were responsible for this, but Justin Volpe was the ringleader in putting this where the sun does not shine with Mr. Louima. Now, when this was going on, one of the first things they did, Captain, was they carted out Justin Volpe's girlfriend, black girlfriend. Hey, I can't be prejudiced. I have a black girlfriend. I don't think so, buddy. Don't think so. We know that men of various political persuasions, various ethnicities, they can separate their sexual liaisons from their politics. Let me repeat that. They can separate their politics from their sexual liaisons. We've seen that all throughout history. So my only gripe is I don't know if this was, if this really had to be mentioned. I don't think it means anything. It shouldn't mean something special or unique. I think that the uniqueness of this what bothers me. And on the flip side, mind you, Captain, there's a flip side. On the flip side, there's this thing with Miss Goff bringing this out that sometimes some black women do have this kind of competitive thing with black men where, you know, black men, many black men or some black men may be considered attractive from other races, that they may be found attractive from other races. So when this happens on the black female side, that, you know, that flag has to go up and says, well, listen, Mr. Ryan found us attractive. There's an element of that, I think, with Goff bringing this out. For it to be known that this quote-unquote hip white guy is quote-unquote liberal in his bedroom habits. So I've seen this before, this whole squirreling phenomenon. They put in these ghetto-centric blogs, media takeout, notwithstanding. They promote this as some kind of uniqueness. Guess so-and-so, look, girl, look, girlfriend, so-and-so is on the swirl. As if these are just two people dating. They can't just be two human beings, Robert and Nancy, Joseph and Keisha, dating. Just two people dating. No, it's the swirl, Captain. It's check out the swirl. Look, 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 people. Come on. Come on. Stop it. Stop it, people. There's nothing over here. Move along. Move along. There's nothing here. Captain, I think we should do a transition.
Yes, sir.
Enough of this. Actually, before we get to the Todd Akin case, I want to play this trailer for a new BBC America TV show that I really like based on historical data, based on history, called Copper. Essentially, it's Gangs of New York on television. I'll get into it after this quick trailer. This is Copper, the trailer, courtesy of BBC America. Hold on.
Coming this August from Barry Levinson and Tom Fontana.
Police!
He saved my life and got himself a detective's badge.
Look at the Irish.
In 1864, he was New York's finest.
I want to know how he actually died.
You don't know who you're dealing with, Copper.
Why do you care about that little tramp?
Why do you go home?
Tomorrow, you move on.
Moving on. Not really my specialty.
Copper, coming this August to BBC America.
Okay, for True Blood fans, on Sundays, the fact that True Blood, at least on the East Coast, True Blood comes on at 9 o'clock, you can check out at 10 o'clock on BBC America. this new show called Copper. Now, the reason why I'm fascinated by Copper is for, on several levels. One, we're talking about the infamous Five Points neighborhood in New York City. And this dates back to the mid-19th century. And it's important because
gangs in New York.
It's the gangs in New York. It's telling a historical period of time, in time, where we had all these different racial groups commingling, living together, and there's a lot of things that came out of it that we see today. So you had early NYPD policing. You had corrupt policing, which we still see today, but it was much worse back then. You had all these white ethnics along with African-Americans, freed African-Americans. Again, this is the North. You did have slavery in the North. You did have slavery, but slavery ended in New York at around 1824, 1825. It ended much about 40 years, definitely 40 years earlier than southern-based slavery. So you had free blacks commingling with the Irish, with Italians, with Jewish folk, all these white ethnics. And it makes for a fascinating mix. And also, we talk about the Bloods and the Crips and all these gangs today, the 20th and 21st century gangsters or gangstas. We say gangsters. But gangsterism dates back. I mean, one could say gangsterism dated back to when we were brought over here in the hulls of ships. But being more technical, gangsterism dates back to this Five Points neighborhood when you had the Irish Westies, you had the Italian, the nascent Italian mobsters, all these different groups in the mix together. And mind you, when you see this, again, folks, I definitely would implore you to – I mean, it's a great TV show from what I can tell for the first season. A lot of things going on. They have a black character who helps the main white character, the protagonist, hence Copper, the white police officer, quote-unquote Copper, helps him as a forensic specialist. Now, early 19th century – or mid-19th century forensic specialist. It's a black person doing this. Now, the issue is the white guy has a friendship with the black gentleman, but he is not allowed to take credit. The black gentleman is not allowed to take credit for this knowledge. He has to do these autopsies in secrecy. But it's interesting to see black science, black genius on this show, and the fact that the white guy, with the black man's permission, had to take credit. Because if it was found out that a black man was coming up with these determinations, these forensic determinations, the white people would discount it. They would discount it. So it's important to see this historical record. Captain, you have a question.
Yes, is this historically correct, or is it just propaganda, or is it just, are they mixing it both up on this show? From your, from your standpoint.
Well, listen, I only saw the first show. I think that it's going to be played for dramatic. It's going to be dramatic license or cinematic license. With anything you see, it's very difficult for it, unless it's some kind of documentary. And even then, sometimes there's a slant to some of these things. But I think for the most part, there's a lot of historical accuracy as to the existence of the Five Points neighborhood, how these racial groups intermingled at that time. I'm pretty sure there was some cohabitation at that time back then as well. But we're talking about people that were living. And this was you're talking about the slums. This is in, the Five Points essentially talks about the five cross streets, the five intersecting streets in mid-Manhattan. And at this point, this is also where blacks, Italians, Irishmen, especially black folks and Irish people, were together. Some positive intermingling, a lot of negative intermingling. But you see what we see today originates from that period. But the actual gangsterism of white folk at this time, it's fascinating to see, because you mentioned this before, Captain, I think the last show. When I go on and on, when I rail on Media Takeout and all these other ghetto-centric blogs, the fact that that there's a segment of the black culture, or segment of the black population, that seems to have embraced gangsterism, or at least promote it for some kind of financial access, some kind of financial movement that promoting this gangsterism. It doesn't originate with black people. When you see how these people get down, and even if you do the actual research about Five Points in New York, about the gangs of New York, and you see early Euro gangsterism in the States, the Bloods and the Crips have nothing on these people. But the issue is, because of white skin color privilege, they were able to move out of their status as white immigrants and move into, for the most part, move into the general white populace. But before that, you were an Irishman, you were Italian, you were a swarthy Italian, all kinds of things that were going on, they were dealing with ethnocentrism from whites that were more Anglo-Saxon, that whole thing. That dynamic was very much in place during that period of history. So I think it's important for black folk to do the research to understand that that some of us who want to embrace gangsterism as if it's new with you, new with people of color, you're doing yourself a disservice. You're doing yourself a disservice. I've said this before. There's a book that you can get on our site, on Afronerd.com. It's called Black Rednecks and White Liberals. Black Rednecks and White Liberals. And the book talks about the development, folks, of lower tier, or dare I say, cracker culture. Lower tier cracker, quote unquote cracker, or the low white trash culture that started at one point and it segued into ghetto culture. They're essentially one and the same. It's less about skin tone, more about the culture. We have a caller, Captain. Let's get into it. Caller, welcome to Afternoon Radio. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from. 646. Hello, 646. Hello, 646? All right. Captain, I have no idea what that's about. The numbers are free. Don't be scared. 646-915-9620. 646-915-9620. Again, folks, just giving you a little bit of history. Check out Copper every Sunday at 10 p.m., courtesy of BBC America. Pretty interesting stuff. I think we might have time for one more musical break, Captain. And then I want to talk about Todd Crazy Horse Aiken. He's a nut, I think. He's a nut. This rape madness that women can decide whether to get pregnant or not based on their heightened emotionalism during this horrific experience. Hey, get rid of him. Get rid of him. At least that's what some of the GOP would like to do. Get rid of this guy. All right. Folks, let's groove a little. This is America's Secret by Shelley Nicole. America's Secret. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
America's got a dirty little secret that everybody knows. You do hide it so well, but now it is so. Stop confused when you see the news. Why boys gunning people down like they ain't got nothing to lose? America's secret, you're talking too loud. America's secret, you're talking too loud. America's secret, you're talking too loud. America's secret. America's got a dirty little secret that everybody knows. Won't let folks rest their heads from hate, but come in and drove from coast to bone. Not that folks don't need a safe place to live, but who deserves it more to not be determined by color and skin? White kids are a clique,
black kids are a gang.
White kids kill the trouble,
black
don't care nothing about the drug game. For one of their own on crack cocaine. America's secret, you're talking too loud. America's secret, you're talking too loud. America's secret, you're talking too loud. America's secret.
Carol, I have two words to any woman watching this program right now, and that's wake up. This isn't just about one person. This isn't just about Aiken. This isn't a one-off. This isn't a misspeak. This is an agenda. This is an ideal. This is a theocracy that's embedded in the GOP. This is not the first time we've heard something similar like this come from someone in Congress representing the GOP. In fact, right here in Michigan, a Democratic woman was banned, was censored from the House from talking after their debate about abortion, and she said the word vagina. And the Republicans thought it was so offensive that she said the word vagina about abortion, and she was censored. So this isn't just about Aiken. This is about the party and their theocracy. And women need to wake up. This is so much bigger than this.
And, okay, Will, you can't deny that Democrats will argue that Paul Ryan was compatico with House Resolution 3, which redefined rape as only forcible rape. He co-sponsored the bill with Aiken.
Okay, so first of all, this is exactly what I'm talking about, what LZ just said and did, which I am friends with LZ, and I'm thoroughly disappointed at what I see as an irresponsible claim that you're trying to take what one man said that is completely indefensible and actually somewhat incapable of being understood. What is legitimate rape? What is this mysterious process that women's bodies have that you suggest they can shut down pregnancy? These completely simply crazy claims and now extend that to a larger GOP mindset that endorses a theocracy that LZ said, the height of absurdity of the things that I just heard and the perpetuation of that we will hear is nothing short of sheer political pandering. That's it. Dishonest pandering.
Every single time there is discussion about rape in the GOP, they talk about the role of religion being the main factor why this bill, abortion, should not be legalized in this country. They cite religion. They don't cite science. They cite religion. So I'm not overreaching, nor am I overstretching this. This is consistent with that. And, oh, by the way, since you're trying to stretch and make things meet, what about forcibly rape? Okay, if you don't want to say about the body shutting down like Aiken said, what about Paul Ryan and forcibly rape? How do you explain that?
So here's the deal, so we can bring some clarity to this conversation. The concept that
there is clarity to this conversation. You're backpedaling.
No, go ahead, Will. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm halfway into a sentence, LZ. I would really appreciate if you let me talk here. The concept that many GOP and conservatives are opposed to rape in all circumstances, and some who are not in the cases of rape and incest, has nothing to do with defining what is legitimate rape. And by the way, Debbie Wasserman Schultz linked between whatever Todd Akin meant. I have no idea what he meant by legitimate rape and forcible rape is tenuous. There are other explanations, but besides the point, I don't know what he meant, and I don't think there is a legitimate explanation. But again, the concept that abortion is linked to rape or whether or not when life begins and the religious implications there has nothing to do with also someone saying that women can shut down pregnancy. The whole point is you're taking what is a legitimate debate about abortion and when life begins and who should be accepted from this process and when it should be legal and when it should not to one extremely crazy comment about medical processes and redefining what is and is not rape from one man in Missouri.
All right, folks. Once again, going back to the musical cut, America's Secret by Shelley Nicole, definitely a slamming cut. And folks, you know, listen, I'm really about this Afro-nerd thing that we have to play these kind of songs. We just have to. It's really a lot of good music. Shout out to OKPlayer.com. That's the Roots outfit. OKPlayer.com, Afropunk.com, BoldAsLove.us. There's plenty of good music out there. It's not all about this minstrel stuff, for real. We have to really start expanding our musical palette. Anyway, getting to the story at hand, folks, if you haven't been living under a rock, we have a Missouri congressman, Todd Akin, who is actually, even as we speak, running for the Senate seat in that state, in Missouri. And during the 19th, so let me talk about a couple of days ago, during an interview on a St. Louis television station, they got into this whole discussion of rape and abortion. And we have one of these far-right guys that oftentimes taps into overt religiosity. Let me repeat that. That taps into overt religiosity. He is going to have, he or she, some would say, will probably have foot-and-mouth disorder. Foot-and-mouth disorder. He goes on and on about, again, talking about Representative Todd Akin, talking about this notion that it's highly unlikely that a woman could get pregnant from a rape scenario because of all these internal processes or processes that occur on an emotional and hormonal level. There is no evidence that this goes down. But you have lunatics who are in office that have these beliefs, and rightfully, but this is about political expediency. It is about political expediency on both sides. The Republicans said, wait a minute, we have to cut this nut loose. So almost all these high-ranking GOP folk are saying, we have nothing to do with this fool. Because they know that although he is running for a specific seat, from a specific state, this can have a snowball effect. And in true political gamesmanship, it looks like the Democrats are really about this guy. They probably are thanking God that we've already forgotten VP Joe Biden's comments. We've already forgotten about him. We're already on to the next story. this story is big, and they want Mr. Aiken to drop from the race, but he says he is not. And also, as mentioned in that piece on CNN, again, folks, that was from CNN, between an argument, or let me say a debate, to be more accurate, a debate between two CNN commenters. They want this guy to go away, but there's a connection between Representative Aiken and Paul Ryan. They have supported bills. They have promulgated bills that are very much about making decisions on behalf of women. That goes into a whole different thing. This whole war on women thing is another thing as well. That both parties are trying to gain their balance, gain some kind of edge on it. So right now the Democrats are handing it heavily to the Republicans, trying to make that connection that this is how you Republicans feel about women. That's the main story here. We only got about 3 minutes, Captain. Any thoughts on Aiken and his foot and mouth disease?
I'll be terse. He was talking out of his anus without a colonic, okay? So the fecal matter came out. Let me repeat that. He was talking out of his anus without a colonic, so the fecal matter came out. This is what happens when men design policies for women. They come with these ridiculous statements that just drop out of their mouth. None of these people here are women. They don't know what goes on. They don't know what happens when a woman has an orgasm from when she does not have an orgasm, and when a penis is put inside of her and when it doesn't. They just know what happens on their end. So they're talking total foolishness, nonsense. That's what came out of his mouth at the end of the day. So they need to just drop it, because more fecal matter may come out of this man's mouth at some point, and this turns around and makes everybody look bad. Back over to you, Seraph III.
Yeah, I mean, this whole notion, even the president weighed in, and again, political gamesmanship, political chess. The president weighs in because the operative word here is legitimate rape. He used the term about, you know, rape is rape. When you start coming up with these quantifiers, legitimate rape, no, that's not going to fly. So I'm curious as to how this is going to work out, if this will dovetail. I mean, this could potentially dovetail from just a senatorial Missouri matter into the, dare I say, the main election. All right, folks, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure. We'll do this again on Sunday. You know we have our Double Duty show. We have our comic shop show for the geeks, for the nerds on comic books, pulp, fantasy, sci-fi, you name it. And then we're back again with the Week in Review show at 7 o'clock. And trust me, we have more guests forthcoming. Make sure of that. We're looking at Michael Jai White coming up soon. Michael Jai White, great actor, martial artist, and also Black Dynamite. So on that note, let's get into some groove, as always. This is, well, you know who it is. It's Prince, Erotic City Live. See you on Sunday.